Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 36 of a year-long conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about education and the education system. It's our education episode. It's one we've been wanting to get into for a long time. This is the first episode of our final trilogy. Every once in a while, we like to do three episodes of kind of a similar theme. This is the big one. It's our Big Things trilogy, where we talk about the three biggest things in America. Joining me, as always, is Blue and Alabama's Michael. Michael, I know you're as ready as I am to tackle the education beast.
I've been ready for this for a long time.
I know you've been salivating because this is something we've both thought a lot about, and we have a background in this. Between the both of us, we've had almost every job you can have in education. Just a little bit about our backgrounds. I was a substitute teacher for, I guess you could call it a suburban school system. I really call it more of a rural school system. To me, suburban means you're an hour away from a city. In this case, suburban means no city in sight. So I was a sub for a fairly rural school system. Then I worked inside a dorm for a public high school in inner city Mobile, although it didn't fill inner city. Then I worked at a college, and you know those annoying things you get from your college alumni association that are like, hey, send this money. We would work in the alumni office looking for people that had just come into some money, didn't know who to send more shit to give to Auburn. And then I worked for the teachers union for about 3 weeks, because when the legislature in Alabama passed a new law, like, you couldn't do direct deposit anymore. You had to basically do the deposit a different way. It was really just the Republicans trying one more way to break up the union. And I worked for the union for only about 3 weeks, and I didn't really meet anybody political. It's amazing that they don't really talk politics like people think. Well, I'll get into that later. But you, on the other hand, you're a current teacher, and you've worked for a lot of different types of school systems, like one's inner city Montgomery with some kids that I think we could call rough would be appropriate, maybe. I think we could put that in quote marks. And then now a charter school we could call less rough. Also, wealthier schools in Birmingham, and then rougher schools in poor neighborhoods. Between the both of us put together, probably more about this than most people talking about education.
Yeah, absolutely.
My mom was a teacher for 100 years. I mean, it was really 40 years. She taught for about 40 years, and then legislature basically forced her into retirement. They were trying to basically push anybody who cost too much into retirement, whether they were a fit teacher or not. She's not that old. 60's not that old anymore. But they pushed her out, but then they hired her right back as a contracted teacher for half the pay. They said, we don't want you in May, but then this year they called her and said, hey, we want you just for no benefits and half the pay. So they called her back, and now she's contracted out. My grandmother was a teacher before that. She taught special ed kids from 2008, kind of when the recession started, and I couldn't find any type of job post-college, really for about 3 years. My income was being a substitute teacher, and sometimes I have long-term gigs and short-term gigs. And basically what I'm trying to say is, like, for people at home, we don't ever really script this. I pick a theme and then just run with it for about an hour and a half, or an hour, 30 minutes to an hour and a half. That's how structured it is. It could be 30 minutes. It could be 90. We don't really like to fence this.
And you know, for this one podcast, like, well, we know they don't use note cards.
Yeah, for those smart-ass listeners at home saying that, too. Like, and we use very, very light editing, too. Like, I don't ever edit content out. If I ever edit anything, it's just pure noise. So those people at home being like, boy, this sound quality is garbage. I'm like, you should hear what gets taken out. And the stuff that gets taken out is like two humpback whales having sex or something. Like a hyena on auto-tunes. They're like inaudible noises, basically. We don't edit a lot. We don't script a lot. We like to do it free-form. But this is one where I kind of wish I'd gotten a note card out. It would be appropriate for education, because I know we're going to forget stuff. Because, I mean, this is literally something that we wanted to talk about the whole conversation. And now that we're not in the final stretch, but closer to the ending than the beginning, education. So to start us off, this is something that I used to hear people say, there's three jobs everybody should do so they know how hard they are: cashier, waitress or waiter, and teacher. Because there are three jobs that everybody gives a bunch of shit to. I've been a cashier. It is harder than you think. It looks easier than it is.
Yeah.
I've been a waiter. Waiter's a lot harder than you might think. People think it's a lot easier, but when you have four belligerent tables coming there at the same time, they're like, why has he not brought my chicken wings? Because the two people near you need drink, and the person behind you needs breadsticks, and the person over there is like getting drunk in an Applebee's. Who gets drunk in an Applebee's? I'm not really sure, but they're over there ordering like 10 drinks. They're complicated to put them all in. And then teacher is really hard. Being a teacher, I think, might have been the most mentally stressful job I've ever had.
Yeah, I would say that. I have not been a waiter, but definitely retail, working as a cashier, dealing with the public every day, dealing with adults, that's a pain, but at least you can walk away from them. Being a teacher, you're not walking out on those kids. You're stuck with them all day, every day, through the good and the bad. It is mentally tiring.
Let me give one example, because you and I, we're both veterans of Walmart, and we both worked at Walmart, one of the worst employers in America. They didn't treat us so well, and we worked there at the same time. You were in the back end with the trucks. I was a cashier. That's saying I was a cashier, but every time they needed somebody to go out and get buggies, they'd block off our register and be like, hey, but there, and this was like December time, this was the holiday season, it was freezing. I didn't wear a jacket. I thought, oh, I'll be in a nice warm store all day. Nope, I'm outside pushing like 20 buggies up there, and you get them in. Why didn't you do them faster? I mean, they should have been whipping. They won them yesterday. It's so cold out there, you don't even feel the mucus on your face. Like, your mucus is frozen to your face. But I can remember being a cashier at Walmart, a lot of dumbasses, just pure fucking idiots would come in there.
Yeah.
And they'd want, especially if you work the night shift. But I can remember a guy coming in there, and he gave me a $20 bill, and I gave him back the right change. But he said it was the wrong change, and we argued about it. I mean, we must have argued about this for 30 minutes. I mean, this went on and on and on. And he went and got a manager, and we shut the register down, and we can't and all that. But really, it came down to this guy was just purely unreasonable. It was somebody, the manager. And you know, the managers at Walmart, they don't like the employees at all. So they're not really quick to back us up. If you went up to a manager at Walmart and said, yeah, that cashier over there, he looked at me funny, he's fired. They don't back us up ever. But he backed me up, which was a miracle, because that guy hated me. I mean, this is how unreasonable this guy was. But I like to think about that guy and the way he was and not being able to do basic math. I told him to change, and the computer told him to change, and the manager told him to change. His own girlfriend that was with him told him to change. That one guy is being a teacher every day, because you have students from kindergarten all the way up to high school that are just completely unreasonable and demanding. And then you deal with their parents, because people are not rational when it comes to their kids. I'm not rational when it comes to my son. Yeah. That's your emotional blind spot. You could have a student in trouble and be like, oh, he set a fire in the classroom. Well, he said he didn't do it. Like, well, we have video camera out there. You could have faked that. You see what they do with the Roswell Area 51, the moon landings fake? I don't believe it, because it's their kid. So you're dealing with people in a very emotional place. You're dealing with kids who are learning who they're going to be. I think education is one of those issues that it never gets the play that it should, really, on both parties. But once again, we see a really clear difference between Democrats and Republicans. We see a really clear difference, because with Democrats, the worst you can say, and I say it all the time, Democrats don't care about education enough, but the worst you can say about them is that they're not doing enough. With Republicans, you can say they don't even know where to begin. I mean, their ideas are wrong, their solutions are going to make the problem worse. Do you see a really clear difference between Democrats and Republicans when it comes to education?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Republicans have no ideas about how our education system works. And I think that's one reason you see their big plan for education is get the federal government out of it and just leave it to states and local agencies to run it however they want to.
Yeah.
And that is so backwards and so not how it needs to be.
And right, and I mean, we've talked about before, they're always on getting rid of Common Core, taking it from the federal government, going to the local level. When it's states' rights, you're really talking about inequality. When you get rid of Common Core and you take it down to the local level, you'll have some schools like Palo Alto and Berkeley and San Francisco. You'll have some public schools that are like the Jetsons, and Alabama will be the Flintstones.
Yeah.
You'll have some states that are only slightly better educated than Bulgaria, and you'll have some states that look like Tokyo, because when you really are taking it down to the local level, let's give people just a little bit about our educational backgrounds. I mean, I can remember being in public high school in Alabama, and the teacher didn't want to talk about evolution, and they skipped it.
Yeah.
I can
remember
being in sex ed where they skipped birth control. You have a whole sex ed class where they skip NuvaRing, IED, Depo. What are we going to talk about? Teach Depo, NuvaRing, IED? Huh? What's all this witchcraft? You know, I mean, like, what's all this devil's work? I can remember they skipped things that made them uncomfortable. And if you're in a high school where you're not even learning the basics of birth control in a sex ed class, and then you go to a high school in San Francisco, and then by the time the kids are 12 years old, here's your monthly Depo shot, you're dealing with inequalities that are going to ripple out. Because what's the biggest inequality? Teenage pregnancy, people having kids when they're too young and they can't afford to have kids. They have a kid when they're 17, like they do in Alabama. Then that kid gets to be 15, 16. They have a kid. You're looking at genetic poverty, generations of poverty. It's passed down through the genes and decisions. And in California, you're not seeing that. You start seeing a lot of inequality that way.
Yeah.
But let's kind of talk about, I've written articles about it, the most misunderstood organization in America are teachers unions. People totally don't understand teachers unions. Even a lot of liberals. I can remember watching The Daily Show, and Jon Stewart would be liberal on 90% of issues, but then it felt like to throw the conservatives a bone, he would throw them some stuff about teachers unions. Or yeah. He would kind of concede that, like, teachers unions are holding education back. Wrong. Really wrong. And you can tell somebody would say that who's never been in a classroom and they don't know really what's going on. They don't know what teachers unions even do. Teachers unions have nothing to do with why our education system's in trouble. If our education system is in trouble, I don't know that it's really as bad as people say. Maybe if it is that bad, it's because one political party does not believe in public education. So to them, it's always in trouble. Public education is always in trouble to Republicans because they don't think it should exist. Yeah. If $5 goes to it, it's a waste of money.
Yeah.
And I think with teachers unions, they take all the blame. People think teachers can't get fired because of teachers unions. You can absolutely fire a unionized teacher.
Yeah.
It's just you have to have a reason to fire them.
Yeah.
It's really the same it should be for every job in America. The protections that teachers in a teachers union have, every job should have that, but they don't. So at Walmart, when I give the manager a funny look, you're out, you're gone. In a school, luckily, you can't give the principal a funny look and he fires you. You have to have a reason. You have to go through a process.
Yeah.
I've seen teachers get fired in the middle of a school year for stuff. I've seen them do it. And it's not that the union is weak. It's just that you need a reason.
Yeah. The school I was at last year, we went through, I know three science teachers in the school year. The first one they fired, she had been there for, I don't know how many years, but several years, and she was tenured, and she was part of the union. As a matter of fact, she was the union rep at our school, and she was fired because of an issue concerning a student bringing something to school that they weren't supposed to have, and she didn't report it, and she got fired for it. She had to go through the hearing. Obviously, she got suspended until the hearing, and the union stepped in and helped her out with her legal aid, but she still got fired. But they had to go through that process. They couldn't go in and say, hey, you're fired. You have to have a reason. You have to explain that reason, and that teacher is entitled to a hearing.
Let's kind of get into why teacher unions take all the blame. The reason is because Republicans don't like unions, period. It always amazes me that we let Republicans set the debate, and they don't like unions. We know that they don't like unions. We know that they don't believe in them. Really, with teachers unions, you're looking at three or four things that Republicans hate. Unions, education, and government jobs. You're looking at different things that they just don't like, all kind of coming in as a nexus together. For Alabama, for example, Republican legislature would love to break up AEA, the Alabama Education Association, so they could break up the union and take the money that they put into their retirement system. They've been trying to raise the retirement system for years, for decades, really. They want to take that money and shuffle that into something else. It's really about getting the teachers unions out of the way so the money that's earmarked for education and the money that's earmarked for benefits and retirement, they can take that and put it into whatever they want. And that's another reason being them say Common Core is bad, local level, federal government bad, get the federal government out of it. It's really about giving the local thieves more control to ransack the treasury. I mean, do people really trust that bunch of crooks down in Montgomery who don't even believe in public schools? What's your plan to save Alabama schools? Charter schools. Okay, beyond that, private vouchers. There's a Christian academy we can open up. We can send the kids to Georgia. Alabama doesn't even have education lottery. We don't have just the basic bare minimum, and you're supposed to trust them to take away the teachers union's power, take all the teacher benefits, the retirement system, the pay, the classroom size, because teachers unions used to set a smaller classroom size. They were able to do that.
Right.
When Don Siegel was governor of Alabama, he had a law that you couldn't have more than 18 kids between kindergarten and third grade classroom. Every teacher, my mom included, would tell you it was wonderful. And then they got rid of the cap. Caps have gone up and up and up, so now there's about 30 kids in some classrooms. And in some cases, there is no cap. He had a law where you couldn't have trailers, and now they've got trailers out there. Talk about some schools are brand new. Some schools are recently built, and they'll add on 2, 3, 4 trailers to fit more kids in there, or if they want to take some of the facilities that should be classrooms and make it into something else, they'll do that, and then the kids go into a trailer. Again, it just comes back to the old conflict between the Democrats and Republicans of less protections and more protections. And Republicans that say you don't need protections, the second they get their way, they show you why you needed those protections in the first place. When we talk about who's to blame, if it's not teachers' unions, what's wrong with public education? What are some of the problems? How can we fix it? I always talk about the three P's. Public administrators, which we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
There's politicians, which we'll talk about that. And there's parents.
Yeah.
When it comes to politicians, do you think the Republican Party really even believes in public education?
No, I don't. I think when they look at education, they don't see any money in it because there's no, they look at it as a business and there's no immediate return on their investment. They don't look at the long-term benefits and how having an educated electorate is a good thing, and how that will, talking about shipping jobs overseas, well, yeah, when you don't have an educated workforce to work these jobs, yeah, Apple's going to open a factory in China because they don't have we don't have workers who can perform these jobs. They don't look at it like that. They look at it as an expenditure that we can cut this and go to private or charter schools, and we're going to save money, and that education is still going to be there, but we're not going to be out as much money.
When you're talking about they don't believe in public education long-term to an educated population, maybe that's because they know it wouldn't benefit them. I hear people say things like, if the public was more educated, Trump couldn't be getting the traction he is. I don't really know exactly how true that is, but I do think that if you had a more educated population, it would be a lot harder to say trickle-down economics works. You can't find evidence that it's ever worked, and you pretty much have to be a banker or a rich person, and I don't even know if you got the truth serum in their arm. I don't even know if they really believe that it works, but they have a reason to advocate it. Whenever you hear somebody come in and be like, well, more money's not the answer. You hear Republicans say that. More money's not the answer. America already spends the most per capita on their students than any other country in the world. What they're talking about, because I hear that a lot, you can't spend your way out of this problem. Yeah. Basically trying to make the argument that American schools are already overfunded, which is fucking insane. I don't know how anybody can look at our school system. You used to see people come into office and be like, the waste of teachers is going to go out the door. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, those teachers, man, they're on a gravy train with biscuit wheels. And they're just living those salad days of making $50K a year for a master's degree level job. It's crazy to think that way. But kind of what they're talking about is they always compare it to other countries, but America has a unique problem when it comes to education. You're talking about a country the size of an Indonesia or India in terms of population. Like, America is the third most populated country in the world. But when you look at the top 10 countries in terms of population, talking about Nigeria, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Iran, these are not what we think of as cutting-edge education centers. Like, these are not what we think of as like the creme de la creme of the world's education system. And when you do look at the most educated countries, Scandinavia, you have to go down significantly in terms of population. So you have to educate a country of 300 million people who want to have an education standard of living of Norway. When they do those apples-to-apples comparisons of the amount we spend on education versus these other countries, you can't really do that. America's unique.
No.
So we're trying to basically compete with Europe and Japan and these other countries. It's a hybrid, and that's always worked for us, is to try to have the most number of educated people in the world. So I don't really think you can look at it that way. It's always been struck me as false to look at it that way.
Yeah, and not only that, talking about our population, we provide an education for our entire population through Apple.
Right.
And you look at somewhere like
China.
If by, you know, third, fourth grade, you're not cutting it, you're gone. You're not going to be in school. There's a factory job we'll teach you to do at 12. We're not going to waste money trying to teach you something. By the time you're in middle school, you're learning a trade.
Right.
It's not anything like America.
So the second P is public administrators. We'll come back to that, but let's talk about that. What you're talking about. The third P is parents that I think of. And people don't like to talk about this. This is sort of the elephant in the room, the shadow on the wall. But parents are really a lot more important than teachers' unions or even teachers when it comes to a child's education. They've shown study after study after study, parental involvement and who your parents are is the biggest indicator of your success at school. And there's different reasons for that. Some of it is genetic. Your intelligence can be genetic, even though people don't like to ever discuss that or talk about it. Some of it's nurture, because some parents just believe in books. And they used to have a chicken or egg question. They used to say that if you played classical music when a kid was a baby, that would make it smarter. And they could never figure out, is it true that the classical music is what makes the baby smarter, or is it true that the kind of parents who would play classical music would be more likely to do other things, like the preschool and homework, and they'll put more effort into it. People talk about what's different about education now, because when we think about American education, and whenever they show the clips of what we want to be, they kind of go to the 1950s. The boys with the crew cuts and the plaid shirts, and the girls with get dresses, and they're in a little row, and they're like, oh, I can do algebra. Really, that's kind of fake, because if you look at a 1950s curriculum, the curriculum now is more advanced. But people don't think about it that way. They stopped at algebra. Now you go to calculus. I mean, there's a lot more stuff that you learn now than you did 50 years ago. Most people who would have been straight-A students back then couldn't compete in today's education environment because it's gotten so much more advanced. So really, the students today, in some ways, are the smartest generation that's ever been in some ways. But I think what has changed is parenting has changed a lot. And liberals don't like to talk about this, but my website, I review movies, and I saw that movie Sausage Party a couple of weeks ago. Seth Rogen and all these guys, it's really R-rated. I mean, it's an animated movie, but anybody who's fucking Ray Charles could have seen that this is not a movie you should take your kids to go watch. And I went to go see this movie, and there's literally a mother, I want to say a single mother, but she was by herself. I don't want to make any judgments, but she was by herself, and she brought three small kids into this movie, and they sit behind me, and then there's all these like, fuck this, fuck that, the kids are behind me, and then at first the little boy that's behind me, and this kid's not much older than my own son. My son's 3 years old. This boy might have been four. I'm not sure exactly, but he's like, Mommy, I don't like this movie. Let's go watch Pete's Dragon. And she's like, shut up. Fucking movie. Shut it. And then the little girl is just like repeating the bad language, because the more the movie goes on, she's like, take this shit. Like that. This little mini-me puppet behind me, like this sock puppet on my shoulder, like repeating all the bad letters. It really takes you out of the movie. And then at one point, the baby spills the popcorn, and the mother's like, God damn it, I said, don't spill that popcorn, fuck. And I'm just like, first I'm watching the movie thinking, oh, well, she didn't know this movie was bad. And after about 5 minutes, they're going to get up and leave and like go to the theater and be like, oh, we want tickets for Pete's Dragon. Or, I mean, at that same theater, you had The Secret Life of Pets, Pete's Dragon, Kubo and the Two Strings, Ice Age Continental Drift. There were four kids' movies. That she could have bought a ticket to instead of this movie.
Yeah.
And she bought a ticket for probably the most inappropriate movie they could have watched. I mean, they could have went and saw Suicide Squad. It might not have been this bad for them. This is probably the worst movie that they could have seen. But she didn't care. Because the more the movie was going on, I was like, oh, wait, she doesn't give a shit. Like, it's not that she doesn't know that it's bad. It's that she doesn't care. And I'm hearing how she talks to them. The thing she got the maddest about was this girl dropping the popcorn and talked about she's going to whoop her ass if she drops it again. When people ask me, like, why would you send your son to a private school? This is why. Because these kids are going to grow up and they're going to be 10, 11, 12 years old. I'm going to beat your ass. You drop the popcorn. You know, they're picking this crap up to home and they're going out into the world and they're doing this. You got to kind of protect the kids a little bit more. Wait a minute, Alabama liberal. You got the filthiest podcast on iTunes. You're doing all the cursing in this podcast. We don't hear Blue in Alabama ever. Every single one of these podcast episodes that's been explicit has been because of you. That's true, but my son's not listening to these podcasts. It's not for him. When I say I don't take you to the sausage party, that also means, okay, they're just going to do a podcast now. You can go do something else because you're not going to be around when I do this. So it's really about protecting kids more than people are willing to do. After this party, I went and saw Jason Bourne, and some couple brought a fucking baby in the theater. I mean, a baby. Like, they brought the damn, by the car seats, like, what you carry a baby around, a bassinet or whatever. They brought this in the movie theater. And during the action scenes, Bourne's will be like, I'm going to find out who I am. Bam, 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 bam. Car chases the baby. Like, where? I'm just like, oh, God, really? 3 or 4 months before that, I went and saw Deadpool. And that might have been the same single mother from Sausage Party, but some single mom brought three kids in Deadpool and watched Deadpool right behind me or whatever. I mean, they must be like, oh, we're going to pick that when Bernie goes to the movies and go sit right behind his ass and ruin any movie. These movies, Deadpool, Sausage Party, Jason Bourne, if you're a three-month-old baby, like, these are things you could leave. What killed me about Jason Bourne was that both parents went. So I'm sitting there thinking, like, you can't say that nobody was at home to watch the kid, because one of you could have been at home to watch it if you went to the movie by yourself. Yeah. You know, we did a date night. I know we just had a baby 3 months ago, but let's pretend that we don't have a baby and go watch Jason Bourne and just kind of drag it along with us. And any public school teacher will tell you that this is how it works, where there's a bad kid in class. Most public schools are not that bad. If there's 30 kids, there's 5 that ruin it for everybody. So there's 5 or 6 that destroy it for everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe not even that many. Some classes I've taught in, there's one bad kid will ruin the whole class. And you go into the class, and the kid's acting up. It's been terrible. You go and you call the mother. You can't find the mother. The mother's nowhere. You call the mother again. You can't find the mother. Then if anybody ever steps in, or like you say something to the kid, or the principal yells at the kid, or they feel like you punched them in the wrong way, the mother's the first person up to that office is complaining about your harsh treatment of it.
Oh, yeah.
Not even the 50s. You can go back to the 80s. You can go back to any time period. I know for me personally.
Yeah, you can go back to our period.
The worst thing that a principal could have did, the principal could have been like, I'm going to pull out this handgun and shoot you in the face. Go ahead. You don't got the balls to do it. I'm going to call your dad. Please don't do that. Anything but just like, please don't call him. And now I think if they call your parents and get your parents up there, the parents are like, why did you get onto my son? Why did you get onto my daughter? What did you do to them? Why is it your fault that this escalated to the point? Like, what did you do to push into this place? And I think that has really changed culturally.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you see parents absolutely, rather than backing the teachers, they're blaming the teachers. And I won't say all parents, but
no.
A lot. At a school that I taught at, we had a student that he was in sixth grade and not even 5 foot tall, and he just quit coming to school. And he was absent for over a month. And we finally, like, our administrators got in touch with them. What's the deal? Like, he hasn't been at school. Is he moved, or what's up? We haven't had any, like, transfer papers. And the mom was like, I just can't get him to get up and come to school. So me, when I was in school, I'd wake up in the morning and go, I don't feel like going to school today. It's like, my lights are on. I feel like I'm being pulled out of bed, like, get to school.
Yeah.
And what's so funny is the student, when they act out in class, and when you finally do get their parents up there, they're pretty much a mirror reflection of their parents. Talking to the parents is just like talking to the kids. I mean,
right.
So you know, like you were saying, they're being taught this at home, and that's something that
it is.
One of the biggest problems.
When people are always trying to put it on, well, America, they spend all this money or whatever, and you got Norway. I'm like, Norway is 5 blonde families that are all second cousins or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like going to, like, Norway is like going to a Partridge Family bus. When you go into a public school in America, the part of Alabama that we're from had a heavy Hispanic population, right?
Yeah.
And some people would say illegal or whatever. I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, I think when people say illegal and undocumented, they usually mean that in a bad way. I'm just stating that as fact. Like, I'm not saying that they should have left. I think we've talked about before that when they passed an immigration bill, it was bad for the community. But when you're going into a school that's got like a third Hispanic population, and they weren't there 2 years ago, and they barely speak a word of English, basically the way that our schools are set up is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, to where the worse you do on the SAT test, the less money you get, because that's seen as a school that's failing. So you get worse SAT scores, you get less money. You have more kids that drop out, you get less money. So there becomes an incentive to pass kids no matter what they're learning. Because if you start to fail kids, they look at that as a school that's failing. So I would have kids that come in and it'd be like, Jose, you didn't do your homework. C. I'd be like, okay, we're going to take a test today. C. They're like, all right, well, did you bring a lunch today? C. What'd you bring? C. Be like, do you speak any English? C. Be like, how much English do you speak? C. He just speaks 10 words of English, but this kid has the same curriculum that, like, all these other kids have. And then you just have to make it work. You just have to find a way to engage him and make it more fun for him. What No Child Left Behind did, I feel like this was another Bush clusterfuck that was such a stupid idea. Like, no teacher likes No Child Left Behind, because what it did was it said, you're going to take maybe some Latino kids that don't speak English, and you're going to take some kids with learning disabilities, and you're going to take all these kids that should have their own special classes, or you're going to put them all in the same classroom. You're basically going to be teaching three tiers of students at once. I can remember there were kids that should have been in special ed, kids that had legitimate learning disability. Like, I'm not talking mild ADD. I'm talking about they would shit their pants in the middle of the classroom because they didn't have cognitive function. Like, all they really were able to do is to take flashcards and then put, like, you're in a fifth grade algebra class and you're in the back of the room with a special aide who's getting you to match the cat with the picture of the cat, and they're in the same room these kids doing algebra. I mean, it's a farce.
Yeah.
It's stupid. This kid is not really going to be able to do the work that you could do anything you want in America. I mean, they got mad. People would get mad. I'd be like, Blake sleeps with a blanket on his head in the middle of the classroom. He traps his pants in the middle of the room. All he can do is take a picture of a cat and match it with the letter C while we're doing fractions in the other end of the classroom.
Yeah.
Like, this makes no sense for him to be in here. You can do anything you want in America. It's people like you that's the reason he can't learn. And I'm like, maybe it's because he's got the IQ of a fucking potato. That's why he can't learn. Like, that might be has something more to do with it than my shitty attitude as a teacher. My shitty attitude as a teacher is not giving him a brain disability. And that's not saying a kid like that's useless, but that's saying if the school he's at, it is a waste of time for him to be in the school that he's at. If he went to another type of school, they would teach them more.
Or if you get him out of the regular classroom and get him in an inclusive classroom, just getting him out of that classroom and getting him you know, in a classroom where he's going to be learning skills and content and things geared towards him. But with No Child Left Behind, you had classroom teacher having to create a curriculum for their students that's going to challenge your highest learning students, your average learning students, your low functioning students, your non-English speaking students. You had to take all of those into account while you're creating some type of lesson.
A lot of people, they can't picture it. When you've not been a teacher, you just can't picture it, really. You know the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan, the D-Day invasion?
Yeah.
Think about that. When you go into, let's say it's the class after lunch. Really, the first half of the day, the kids are groggy. First through fourth period, they're kind of groggy. If you're going to get anything done, it'll probably be the first three periods of the day. Then you go to lunch. Then after lunch, the kids come in the classroom. They're all sitting there. There's 30 kids. They're watching you. They're not really watching you. Half of them are watching you, and the other half are kind of in their own thing or whatever. You start teaching the class. A kid named Blake pulls out a cell phone. You go and you take the cell phone up. As you went to go with that cell phone, Stephen threw a paper ball at Joey.
Yeah.
Joey said, ouch. You go over there and you take the paper ball from Stephen. Then you go over there and you see that Andrew's got scissors and he's over there cutting up the blinds. You go up there, you take the scissors from Andrew, and all the time they tell you don't send these kids to the principal's office. The principal's got enough to deal with. They don't want to deal with it because if you send them up there, the principal's going to look at you as a bad teacher because you weren't able to manage your classroom. Andrew's cutting up the blinds. You go over there, at this point, Madison called Sally a bitch. Now people think kids that are 9, 10, 11 years old, they don't know these words. They absolutely know these words. I found that the TV show South Park is probably closer to the kids than what you think your kids are. Madison called Sally a bitch. You get over there and you say, Madison, don't do that again. At this time, Gina's over there and she just punched Joey right in the mouth. Joey says, ow, what am I, a bully? Madison, all these kids are picking on me today. By the time you go over there and deal with that, somehow Blake went over to your desk and got his cell phone back again. He's playing with his cell phone. Now, about this time, what quiet kid who's got a learning disability that she hadn't been paying attention to, he's crapped himself. So you have to go get the special ed teacher to change his diaper. As you're doing this, Jose's up wandering around the room or whatever, and you say, Jose, what are you doing? Do you need to use the bathroom? C. Do you know where the bathroom is? C. Are you going to go to the bathroom? See, you know, he doesn't speak English, so yeah, I got to go and get him to sit down. Then you got Morgan over there, and she's saying, Mr. Fletcher, are we going to learn anything today? My mom says that I'm not learning enough. My mom's going to call you and be like, why am I not learning enough? And about that time, the one Asian boy in the classroom is done. Where do I put this paper? You're done. We haven't even started it yet. He's finished the whole fucking thing. And then the one Indian boy is like, if this happens again, my mother's going to call the school because the Indian kid, their mother, breathes on their damn neck, make them do everything. But there's some parents that you can't ever find, and they don't want to discipline their kids. The Indian parents are a little too available. After school, the Indian mother's going to come in there and say, I see he only has 2 pages of homework. But was there a third page that he should have had? Did the staple get loose? Is there a third page? Ma'am, I have to get to a faculty meeting. Oh, he needs to go to the faculty meeting. He needs to learn what you're learning. He needs to be in the faculty meeting with you, learning that. Now, this goes on and on and on all day long. And this might not even be that bad of a class, because at this point, there's going to be a kid come up to me and call me a bitch, like right to my face. And this was like the second or third day. And I thought, oh, this is an anomaly. This is some punk-ass kid. This happened 100 times. This happened a bunch of times. And you might be thinking like, oh, where was this school at? Was this Compton or what? No, this is not even a bad school, really, if you think about it. So I can just imagine, and you can tell us, inner city Montgomery, inner city LA, inner city Detroit, you go in there, I'm sure you get called a bitch.
If I had written down all of the things I went through in inner city Montgomery, it would be a best-selling novel. Like, people would mistake it for fiction, because like, they'd be like, there's no way this is going on in a classroom. Yes, a lot of what you just said, we would have 50 minutes of a class. 35 minutes of that is breaking up some type of argument or fight or throwing paper or students wandering out of the classroom and down the hall and dancing in another teacher's doorway. Or when you do finally get to the content, it's time to go.
Now, I have that same, so every teacher says the same thing. They're like, the class will be 15 minutes and we might do 5 minutes of work.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Obama. Last episode, we praised Obama, but when I saw Obama say, maybe kids should go 8 hours, I was like, no! Because there might be 7 periods. They don't do 7 periods of work. I mean, they might do like 3, because you might have study hall, you might have PE, you might have lunch, you might have snack. Really, a shorter day would probably be better. People say, oh, we need to go to school year-round and get rid of these summer breaks. After about March, they don't do shit anyway. So, I mean, really, all you're doing, the whole month of April and May, you're just killing time. And if you filled in the entire summer or whatever, you just have 3 months. Really, it'd be one more way that people could dump their kids out. The teachers are like raising the other kids, because you wouldn't do any work. During those 3 summer months, the teachers would probably show a few more movies. There'd be more fights because it'd be the heat of summer.
Yeah.
Once you start getting to the warm months, the last time you went to a movie theater and it was kind of crowded. I love it when you go to a movie theater and there's like 5 people in there and women are all, it's like, God, it's freezing, it's cold, I forgot my jacket. And when you go to a theater and every seat's full and it's sold out, nobody talks about how cold it is, because it's like a data storage hub where there's all these mainframes just constantly like acquiring.
Yeah.
You get into a crowded classroom around May, it's like the hormones are thick in the air, body heat rising up. I mean, it's pretty pungent.
Yeah.
I did mostly 6th grade, which is horrible. The middle school years are the worst because the kids are between ages. They're not kids, really, and they're not adults. By the time you get to high school, they're too embarrassed to do anything. It's not cool to be the kid who shits your pants. And in sixth grade, they'll do it on purpose just for laughs. But, like, they're too socially awkward in 12th grade to really do anything too crazy. Kindergarten, they still have yes teacher, no teacher. They still have some respect in the sixth grade. I mean, I had boys come in there and be like, yeah, I'm going to fuck that girl tonight. Whoa, no, he's 11 or whatever.
Yeah.
What did this kid say? They're like, yeah, I'm going to fuck that girl tonight. And then 10 minutes later, we didn't get snack. Where's our snack? Oh, my God, my grapes are not in this lunchbox. Yeah. And they're crying about, like, their Lunchables or some shit that the other kid ate. And then in the next minute, they'll have, like, a Beanie Baby and be like, I didn't get a Beanie Baby. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Marco, you're going to fuck that girl tonight. I'm about a Beanie Baby over here crying about it. You just have all this craziness. The third P, public administrators, is important because whenever we talk about the public problems and all the stuff that hogs up all the money, like in a county like ours that we were from, you had five separate school systems in a county that was not that big. The entire county, I don't even know if it had 100,000 people in it, and you had five separate school systems for that one county. It's madness. And some states have a law, like Tennessee has a law where you can only have one school system per county, which is preferable. But a lot of states don't have laws, any restrictions on that. So all it takes is for a couple of people in the city council to be like, oh, we need our own school system. Our town had its own separate school system, even though it only had four or five schools, and the schools, no school had more than a couple of hundred students had it, but it had its own school system separate from the county. And this eats up a lot of money. Every time you have a school, you have a special ed coordinator, a physical education coordinator. There's a central office with five or six different 100K a year jobs. You have your own superintendent, your own assistant superintendent. All these things are 100K a year jobs that shouldn't exist. Yeah. You're bleeding off half the cake just through redundant administration costs by having all these systems.
I mean, you talked about putting in trailers and using classrooms for, you know, other things. That's what they're using these classrooms for. All of these additional administrative positions, useless job titles, the social science coordinator. Why do you need a social science coordinator for social science teachers? You don't.
Right. I mean, I can remember talking to the special ed teachers, and she's over there like, I can't get enough money for basic supplies. There's a special ed coordinator for this school system. There's four schools in the entire school system. I said, what does the special ed coordinator do? He comes in here. He says, is Blake still alive? I say, yes, and then he leaves. He doesn't do anything. And I say, how much does he get paid? $120,000 a year. How much do you, the teacher who has to physically wipe this kid's butt for him, get paid? About $40,000 a year.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Because when you have a school, there's some schools, three or four assistant principals. And I'm like, why does a school with two or three grades have three assistant principals? And people are like, exactly. Why do they? You go inside each individual school, there may be a principal and an assistant principal and a third assistant principal. There's all these things. Then you go higher into the school system and look at central offices and specialty coordinators and all these things. These are all jobs that are bleeding off the cake. And these people get paid a lot more than a regular school teacher does. So in my mom's case, because she's a contracted employee, what they've done, when we were talking about the Uberization of America and the gig economy and the contractor economy in 34, this is a direct example where took what she made last year, what she makes this year, you cut that in half, you give her no benefits, you give her no real protections thing this year. She said that she was showing them like a slideshow on a projector, and she said that the bulb on the projector burst on her PowerPoint, and she had to go try to get the bulb replaced, and the people that contracted her out, the people she works for, the private company, they won't replace it. And then the school said that they can't replace it because that would be funds that they don't have for her as a contract employee. And she goes, well, I need the bulb. It's what I use to teach the classroom. What do I get? And I said, well, I guess you get for it. The school won't pay for it, and the contract people won't pay for it. And she's making half of what she did last year, and they're telling her to buy her own school supplies. And yet the person telling her that, the person who hired her as the contracted out employee boss or whatever, he might make $100K a year. So you're dealing with a lot of these problems, and this is why there's such a mess. Whenever people talk about, oh, we got to take it down to the local level, this is what happens. You have them cutting basic things like school supplies and basic teachers and doubling up on classroom coverage so they can hire somebody in a useless position. It always gets me that people say, well, once we get rid of the teachers unions, we can fire all the bad teachers. No, not necessarily, because what you're talking about is an atmosphere that would be just more political appointments is exactly what it would be.
Yeah.
Like at the school system that I'm thinking about, the state representative's daughter, she has no degree really in teaching. She has a degree in something else, was hired on to be a school teacher, mostly because she's the state representative's daughter.
Yeah.
If the superintendent wanted his granddaughter to get a job, she would get a job. One of the worst teachers that you and I both had is the sister of the former assistant superintendent, and that's how she kept the job. And none of these people were in the union. They're protected through political appointments. And how many schools have you seen where they'd like to get rid of a really good teacher so they could replace them with a football coach? Or somebody that could do some coaching or after school, whatever. So really, there's 100 different ways that you would just wind up with even shittier teachers. You're just going to wind up with teachers that the principal likes, which in my vast experience has not necessarily been better teachers than what you'd be getting rid of.
No, not at all. I interviewed at a school this past summer, and it was a smaller rural school, like out in the middle of nowhere. But I interviewed, and I was talking to the principal, and he asked me where I was from and all of this. And he said that he had been at the school for, I want to say he said about 15 years. And he said that up until the past 2 to 3 years, he only hired teachers from within the county because they knew everybody in the county and you had those connections. Basically what he was saying, he knew the people. But he said because of the population growth with the new interstate that was put in place, basically made this little town kind of a suburb of a bigger city thanks to the interstate. Like the populations really took off and they don't have enough teachers within the community, so they're having to hire people from outside the community now. But that's exactly what he was saying he was doing. He was talking about how all the principals knew each other, how go to the local grocery store, and all the parents knew who you were, and he said that half the teachers on his staff, he was the principal when they were students. And what it comes down to is you get a principal in and he brings in the people he knows.
Right, I know it's all political. The political solution that we always get out of Republicans is, oh, we can save schools through charter schools. That's always their big savior. And really, I can't think of a worse method. It's like when people say, how are we going to get rid of coal and oil? I know, fracking. It's a place where the cure may be worse than the disease. When you move in a charter school, and John Oliver's talked about charter schools in a good episode, if you work at a charter school now, I've had to do this with a charter school. All a charter school really does is try to get around all of the ways that public schools are regulated. It basically takes public money and private school freedom, and that's it. It's private school freedom and public school money, and you just combine that and you get a charter school. At a public school, if a teacher spent $5 the wrong way, like if my mom went out and bought a pack of paper clips, they'd want to know, hey, where's the receipt? Did you go to Staples without getting the receipt? Where the fuck is the receipt? They want to know every $10 she spent. The legislature down in Montgomery is crawling over people's asses. They passed the bill in Alabama that you can't accept a gift of more than $20. If you're a school teacher in Alabama. If you just have to give them more than $20, they consider it a bribe. I mean, I'd love to see that shit, too, where, like, a third grader comes in there and is like, hey, I got this really nice bag of apples. You're going to like it. So what do you think about that test? I mean, you think about, like, in the second grade, really, does it even matter if they get an A or an F? I mean, as long as they pass, what does it really mean? There's no sense in bribing an elementary school teacher. There's just no reason to. Like, the grades don't carry over and really affect anything for your college.
Yeah.
And the parents that would care enough about their kid making A's, they care because they wanted them to learn something, so they don't care enough to go bribe a teacher to give them an A because it's all about what are they really learning. But they passed that to where the kid came in with a $25 gift card from, I don't know, Barnes & Noble or whatever, and mom's like, I can't take it. Then she had to go over to the Republican representative that his daughter had been hired, and she was all showing off these new earrings, and mom was like, yeah, unfortunately you can't take those because they cost more than $20, and you should thank your dad for that because you passed that bill. But they're always counting every penny, every dollar, want to know where it goes. Charter schools have none of those regulations, and they can kind of just blow money.
Yeah, the school system, they have a lot of Chromebooks, and had some that were broken. They spent a bunch of new money on a new football turf for the football field, and they didn't know how they were going to get the money to repair these Chromebooks. All of a sudden, just out of nowhere, teacher calls us for a meeting, all the 8th grade teachers, and she was like, I need an exact count of the number of Chromebooks that you have. Like, I need it right now. Makes the teacher stop, and we have two Chromebook cards that are shared between six teachers to stop the meeting, go count, give her an exact number. She never tells us why. Well, a couple of days later, we get an email that says, teachers, come by the office and pick up your biohazard safety kit. Thanks to a special donation from somebody, we've been able to get biohazard safety kit for all of our teachers. We're in the middle of nowhere, Georgia. Why are we getting biohazard safety kit? It's not like, you know, we're working in Fukushima or something. But I go to the office and I go to get mine, and it's literally a plastic bag with a pair of like latex gloves in it. And I'm so confused at this point. Well, then principal meets with all the 8th grade teachers again and says, I have good news. We're getting every teacher on the 8th grade hall that has an 8th grade homeroom. Everybody's getting a brand new classroom set of Chromebooks. We didn't have money to repair Chromebooks. All of a sudden, we get a donation for these biohazard safety kits, a.k.a. a pair of latex gloves, and now we're all getting classroom sets of Chromebooks.
Right.
Yeah, I think I know where that donation went.
Box of latex gloves is practically free at the hospital. Yeah they probably just went to the hospital. They're like, give me a box of these latex gloves, and if you got a bag of plastic bags, I'll take those too. They got that for free, and then they just bought whatever with the rest of the money.
Yeah.
People might not realize is how conservative most charter schools are.
Yeah.
Employees, you're talking about like in Montgomery, you were among other Democrats because when you're working in like that, there's a lot of Democrats. And the second you get to a charter school, it's more like, I bet you're glad to be rid of those Democrats, aren't you? And you know that they would actually meant that. It really meant blacks. I bet you're glad to be rid of those Democrats. You mentioned that some teacher had a pretty unorthodox method of teaching different types of students.
Yeah. We had a faculty meeting, and this speaker was talking about how males and females learn differently and how they should be taught differently. And ultimately, the parts that I got from it between napping was males and females should be taught differently. And the ultimate solution for that was separate them in the classroom. Have all males in one class and all females in another class. I'm sitting here like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. There's no way, real life. And then the principal stands up after he's done and says, this is a fantastic idea, and anybody that wants to try it out, we can do it. And I'm like, oh my God. So,
oh man. I can already see where that's going. Like by the end of the school year, it's like the Handmaid's Tale in there or something like that. If you go to the boys' classroom, they're learning calculus and algebra. You go to the girls' classroom. Now, that's not, you sew a basket and they smack your hand or something like that. And then they'll have like all these girls doing basically home ec. Like, I thought this was algebra class. You'll think what you're told to think. Like that same teacher, a few months later, he's going to be like, you know, I've noticed that different cultures learn differently as well. We can just find a way to get maybe the white students and the black students in different rooms, and maybe we could learn, see what they learn differently too. And then I think eventually, I've said that maybe in some classrooms, they could have a microcosm of a town. The four or five worst kids of the classroom, they put them in the back corner, and they're back there playing dice games, and they've got like their own drug alleys going on, and then the good kids are in the front of the class, like the suburbs or something. And then they've got, like, if you're a bad kid, but you get less disciplinary notices and better grades, you get to move up to the front of the class, you get all the perks and benefits, and the cops are not happy with you all the time. What if you have, like, this upper mobility game or something? I mean, maybe if people did that, I don't know.
Yeah. To put the icing on the story, during the presentation when he was talking, when separating boys and girls, he said that he did that with some of his classes. And he had reviews, like I'm using air quotes, like he had reviews from actual students. And the boys' comments were just exactly what you would expect. I wasn't focused on flirting with the girls and could learn better. Or I wasn't distracted by looking at what the girls were wearing.
And you know, that teacher probably wrote that comment, though. Probably wrote that one.
Yeah. And the girls' comments were like, I didn't feel the need to dress nicely. You know, I didn't feel like I needed to put my makeup on for class. I felt more comfortable asking a question. And like,
oh,
it was off the wall.
It's a bullshit. First of all, what he's saying is exactly what the Taliban says when they have to make the women wear burqas. It's for the women's own good. They're more comfortable this way. This way the boys don't look at them. Every Islamic dictatorship in the Middle East, this is what they say when they enforce these dress codes. Oh, the men, they can't control themselves. This way, the women are, we were talking about with Islam, it always starts out that way where it's like, oh, we're just keeping the women chained up in the basement for their protection. You see, it's for their benefit. You understand? We're really feminine. We're helping them. There's a very thin line between protecting women and oppressing them. People that oppress women start out trying to think they're protecting them or whatever in some way.
Yeah.
I feel like that presentation would just take a really dark turn, like it shows them up there and the lighting gets weird and then there's like scary music that makes fucking sluts coming here just trying to seduce me all the time, and I can't have those kind of temptations in my classroom, and all these bodily fluids sloshing around, and I'm basically losing his mind up there, Dr. Strangelove style. But at a charter school, the solution to have that save American education is such a stupid fucking solution, because you're going to build a charter school right beside a public school that already doesn't have the money it needs, probably.
Yeah.
And so it already is underfunded. You're going to put a charter school right there, it's going to take the top 5% of the students at that public school. So it's going to take some of the kids that really were the best kids at that public school. It's going to take those kids. It's going to leave behind a lot of kids that probably couldn't get into a charter school, or even if they did get in, they couldn't stay there because they'd get thrown out.
Yeah.
They're going to have bad test scores. They're going to fail classes. They're going to bring that school's rating down so that that school gets less federal money because their SAT scores are worse and their grades are worse, so they get less money. So then it becomes worse the next year. They might bleed off more good students to different charter schools, getting worse and worse every year, and then eventually that school closes down and they say, oh, well, this school failed. And then the top 5% of that school, they're in a charter school, and then the 95% of everybody else, where are they at? Doing nothing.
Yeah.
So if you really let this go into full nationwide effect, Rahm Emanuel, who is a pretty sorry Democrat, but the mayor of Chicago, he did this. He shut down 50 public schools in Chicago to build up a few charter schools, and it's been a disaster. That when they shut down their local public school, they would have to cross town to go to a different school, and it led to all this gang violence. This policy nationwide would be a disaster. People only like charter schools because you can get around the unions that way.
Yeah.
You can get around the unions, you can get around the regulations. And I think part of the reason that they hire really conservative people to work at a charter school is because they're afraid that any type of liberal might build a union there. But that's why they're kind of go out of their way to hire really conservative people to work.
Quiet, Brody, you're going to tell them my plan.
It shows it like around Christmas time. How did the fuck this guy get past our screening? You know, when they hire you, you've got like a hidden camera in your hat, Michael Moore style or whatever, and you're walking in there and be like, yes, I would love to work at this school. But I shouldn't say that, because now if anybody's somebody, he'll go, oh, damn, he's on to us, you know. But I picture charter schools. All I can remember is that 60 Minutes episode where they had that weird, shady billionaire from Turkey living in Pennsylvania. He lived like fucking Howard Hughes, like secluded in that house in Pennsylvania where nobody came to visit him. All I can picture were charter schools. Apparently, he owned like a quarter of America's charter schools. All I picture is this Ponzi scheme, this Bernie Madoff scheme, but with all this money's going in, and then it all goes to him, and he's sitting in this mansion, like, setting his money on fire, like, yes, my plan to ruin education is coming to fruition. All I picture is, like, some scary overlord character that nobody ever gets to meet.
Yeah.
But we barely even get a chance to talk about colleges, but that's a part of education, too. Maybe we'll set that for another time, but when we talk about colleges, one of the biggest problems facing America is student loan debt, and the fact that, like, college degrees have outpaced movie theater popcorn in terms of markup. I mean, the markup on a college degree is now higher than prescription drugs. One of the very first articles I wrote for Alabama Liberal 5 years ago was the underwater degree, which people talk about underwater mortgages. The debt on the house is more than the house is worth, so even if you sold it, you could pay off the debt. I think people now have underwater degrees, where some degrees you go to college for, the amount of debt you take on to get it is a major that can never pay that back. And I think student loans, like any drug, they're easy to find. And easy to, there's a lot of access to these things. I did TV and film at Alabama Public University, which is not really a film school. I've met a lot of people that were not really serious students. When I graduated, I was 21, and everybody around me was 30-something. Everybody around me was getting a bachelor's degree, and they were like 32. One guy brought his wife and three kids and all this stuff. He's like, man, my family's so proud. And I'm just like, oh, shit. Typically, you would meet people that were business majors, and then they couldn't pass a class or something, and then they were pre-pharmacy majors, and then they flunked out, or they were chemistry majors, and they flunked out. You'd meet people that had been through three or four different majors to wind up in TV and film or mass media communications. And I met one guy that he had well over $100K in debt. and he was going to flunk out of TV and film. And he said, oh, I'll go into zoology. You know, he's going to be a zoologist. I don't even know if there's a zoologist in America. I imagine, like, there's probably 200 zoologists for every opening in America. Like, I imagine there being one zoology opening a year, and it's like a golden ceremony. It's like the NFL draft. They bring all the zoology majors to this banquet hall, and they go, you've been picked as the zoology job applicant. Yes, I can make $35K a year and pay off my student loans by the time I'm 65. So I think he went into a major with no growth and no opportunity and would never probably ever pay back well over.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably closer to $200,000 than $100,000. And it's horrible. And I think colleges are structured to not get you out of there faster. I went to a community college for 1 year, but I basically took an associate's degree level course in 1 year. So I would take like 18 or 21 hours a semester because you can. Like, people always think, oh, they recommend 12 hours a semester, which is 4 classes. Well, yeah, but what they recommend is like a credit card company saying, here's the minimum. What they recommend you do is to keep you there as long as you can. Oh, I don't recommend summer classes. That's going to spoil the, because you can get through faster that way. So I did like a year's community college, 2 years in that 1 year. And when I got to the real school that I went to, they kept trying to get me to, oh, you should take more electives, or you should take this, or you should add on these classes, or, oh, wouldn't it be fun to? And I'm like, no, you're just trying to get me to take more stuff than I need so I'll be here longer. And it was all about trying to get more tuition. And then you'd go into some college professor's class, and he would assign you 3 or 4 books, and they were books he'd written. Like, it's some guy who's like me trying to be an author, and then it didn't go the right way for him, so he became a college professor. And then he's like, oh, well, I wrote a book. It's at the college bookstore. It's only at the college bookstore, and you got to pay $100 a copy. You can't buy it anywhere else but from the college bookstore. And he uses the book one time. And so there's all these ways that you can pile on debt and expense and cost. Bernie, he's not wrong. College debt being what it is insane.
Yeah, it is. What Bernie was saying, I don't think we can just wave a magic wand and wipe it all away.
Right.
But we've got to do something. People talk about the national debt and talk about how that's such a major deal. But when you look at, you know, the national debt, that's not as big as a deal for an entire country than what you were saying, $100,000, $200,000 are for a single person.
Right.
Like, something has to be done.
Yeah, Republicans always get that debt counter and they go, right now, you owe, break it down per citizen. They go, and then they'll show that they say somebody else for national debt. Oh, man, that ain't nothing compared to my student loans, my busted up mortgage, my bad credit rating. I got credit card bills for more than that, buddy. But I want to end this on just a little personal story. My son started preschool 2 weeks ago. I wanted to do an education one after Labor Day because I thought people would be thinking about education. And he started preschool. We knew we wanted for him to have a better education than we had. My wife, living in Nigeria, growing up there, her education, she's well educated, but I think she would say it wasn't as good as she'd like. And I think my education, Alabama's not known for it, let's put it that way. I feel like I'm pretty well educated. I feel like I'm self-educated. But our son, he started preschool because we wanted to shoot for the stars. We wanted to get him into the best private preschool that was possible. And so in Los Angeles, we went to 3 or 4 different really ritzy preschools. The first preschool we went to, when we were doing the walk-in tour, we saw Blue Ivy, okay? So like Beyonce and Jay-Z's kids. On the tour, we saw Ron Livingston, an actor. This is first choice. We go in for the interview. They barely even talk to us. I mean, it's like rubber stamp, no, rejected. Then you go to another school, no, rubber stamp, rejected. Then you go to another school, no, rubber stamp, rejected. Then you go to school that you really like, and they seem to like you, and it seems like the stars are going to align. It seems like things are going to go really well for you. And then they say, okay, here's the schedule. You come in for the tour, and you take the tour. Then one of you is going to come back for an interview. Then the other one's going to come back for their interview. Then the kid's going to come in for his interview, because he has to be interviewed too. Now, I don't know what you interviewed the 3-year-old about, but we took him in there or whatever, and they interview him. Then you got to come back for the joint interview. Then you got to fill out a resume. Then you got to fill out a questionnaire. And the questionnaire were like, I'm talking about ACT level think piece questions. These were like, what did you take for the LSAT for the law degree or whatever? And they were like word questions, and you had to write down different things. Then there was a follow-up. This process is like trying to get into the CIA.
Yeah.
And this is a process for preschool. This is for somebody who's 3 years old. What are your education goals? Well, he wants to learn about trains right now. He's pretty big into cars. So they want to talk about these things. But when we went into the joint interview, I mean, we did everything the right way. We did our resume way the right way. He came in for his interview and aced it. The teacher even said that he loved it when he was leaving. He said, I love it here. We did everything exactly the right way. But going for our joint interview, the woman's talking about all the school plays that they do, and they're showing clips of these school plays. This looks like some shit on Broadway. You halfway expect Anne Hathaway to come out singing and like crying Les Miserables. This looks like full production values. On her bulletin board, there's a pamphlet for the school play, and in that school play, it said something about like the school play had an African theme. Well, that's from Nigeria, which goes, they show the school play. It's like six blonde kids singing in Swahili. There's not one actual African kid up on the stage, or even black, or even biracial, or nothing. One black girl, and she was in every page of the brochure, the bulletin board. I know there's one black kid that went to that whole school out of the 100 or whatever that are there. She was in every piece of promotional material that we saw. We do everything the right way, and then the day comes that they let us know if we get in the school or not, and they send us a letter that says, maybe. And we're like, oh, shit. So they put us on a wait list for 3 months, but they still keep inviting us to events. So they invited us to go to a school play that they're doing, which is kind of cruel when you didn't get in, because it's kind of like, oh, here's what your kid's not going to get to do.
Yeah.
But if we got rejected, we wouldn't have kept doing all this stuff. But because you get waitlisted, it's even worse. But you know you're probably not going to get in, but you still have to keep doing it, because if you don't, you definitely won't get in. So they dragged it out for 3 more months. July rolls around, and we're like, did he get in or not? Because you never let us know. And they said, well, maybe. And they keep dragging it out. Finally, they let you know that he didn't get in, but he did everything exactly the right way, and we went through all their crazy hoops, and it costs money to apply to these schools. Like, every time, like, these private schools are always like, oh, we love diversity, we love people from different backgrounds, we want to encourage people from all socioeconomic backgrounds, oh, it's $100 to apply to this school. If you're talking about a school where you got a 1 in 50 shot of getting in, they don't have $100 to put that on a gamble of getting into a school like that. This is the problem. Whenever people are kind of like, well, what's it like to be black, or what's it like to be poor, or what's it like? Think about going into a room and you desperately want to get into that room, and you go through all that process and you do everything exactly the right way, and they're still not going to let you in that room. For him and my son, if he were to get famous as an actor, or if he were to get famous as a sports star, it would change, and they would be like, oh, come. But right now, while the playing field's level and the playing field's exactly where it needs to be, and he's got just as good a shot as anybody else, the playing field's not really level. Even though it's level right now, they don't let him in, so it's not really level, and they wait till it's so unequal, because all these rich kids from Brentwood are going to get in the school, and all the legacies, and they've become so unequal that the only way he can equalize it is to basically be really exceptional later on in his life. That's the problem with our education system. That's the problem with America, really.
Yeah, it is.
Would you say that problems with America are really problems with what kids are when they're young and what they become?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueInAlabama.com.
And you find me at Alabama Liberal. Join us next time. This whole trilogy is going to be really good. Thanks for listening, everybody.